Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hi, this is Josh Marshall, and this is the Josh Marshall Podcast. We're doing a special episode today. I like to do these a little more often. We haven't done one in a while, but we have a lot of breaking news, and particularly this emerging story that was first a whistleblower story. Now it's tied to Ukraine. So we got a lot, Kate.
Yeah, we do. Unfortunately, yeah. We're missing DT today, but we have Josh Kavinsky here who will fill his shoes, I'm sure.
Hello. Yeah, yeah. Happy well, before, be let me just read a little ad copy before we get going here, just so we can get everything underway. Breaking news in the cold brew world, Grady's Cold Brew is now shipping all of its liquid products nationwide. Now everyone has access to all of the products that made Grady's famous. 32-ounce bottles of New Orleans style, concentrate, 42-serving bag and boxes, and even single serve bottles. That's a huge thing. I didn't even know about that myself. Drink it straight, mix in your favorite milk, or spike it for a caffeinated cocktail. You don't like coffee?
I don't like coffee.
Yeah, this is...
I do like alcohol, though.
Okay, all right. So maybe this is this can be like a gateway drug for you.
Exactly.
For coffee. In any case, Grady's is brewed and bottled daily at their brewery in the Bronx, so bottles ship cold for peak freshness. Ready to give it a swirl? Get 20% off your first order at Grady'sColdBrew.com with promo code TPM. That's Grady'sColdBrew.com with promo code TPM. So
this story's been brewing for a while, and it's really come to a head this week. We had the revelation that there was this whistleblower situation going on, and the acting DNI was blocking that testimony from Congress. And then we had more revelations, you know, Wednesday night that Trump had a phone call with some foreign leader that seemed to be related. And then Thursday night, news broke that the foreign leader was the Ukrainian president, which our very own Josh here had a crystal ball about or something. So I think Josh is going to take us through his longtime reporting on this.
And just briefly, before you came to TPM, you were working for an English language publication in Ukraine. So like you really come loaded to bear with a lot of context and language skills. And you've been on this story for months. So what's the story?
Right. So I think to understand what's been going on, you have to understand what Giuliani kind of has done in his career since he left politics, which is that he basically monetized his political influence for foreign actors. And a lot of that focused on Ukraine. I mean, he was working with Ukrainian oligarchs and Ukrainian officials for a long time. And what
now,
happened-
that's even before sort of Trump era stuff?
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, this
okay.
is going back, you know, into the mid-2000s.
Okay.
I mean, this
okay.
is going back a long time. And so in January 2019, Giuliani starts meeting with Ukrainian prosecutors. We know this from his own statements, from various from public reporting. And the focus of those meetings is two things. One is ginning up investigations into the activities of Hunter Biden, so Joe Biden's son, in Ukraine. And the other is spurring on investigations in Ukraine that would discredit the prosecution of Paul Manafort for financial misdeeds relating to money that he earned while he was in Kiev, working for the previous government there. So this story develops over the spring. It comes to a head after Ukraine elects a new president in April. In May, Giuliani plans a trip to Kiev. Basically, he actually tells the New York Times in that trip that he's going there in order, he's not interfering with an election. He says he's interfering with an investigation. That's his actual quote. And so he, you know, there's a big big outcry about this, a big public uproar, and he cancels the trip. And from then on, we don't know if he is still trying to do this. If he's still,
and that is in, when is that?
That's
when is that canceled trip?
Early
that's
pretty, May.
So it's beginning of the summer.
Yeah, yeah. So and so from then on, we actually don't really know if he's kind of still doing this. He meets with this guy, Andriy Telezhenko, in late May. I read about this. I talked to Telezhenko. Telezhenko is this like former staffer at the Ukrainian embassy in Washington. He's somebody who for a long time has promoted this narrative that the real collusion in 2016 wasn't Trump and Russia. In fact, it was the DNC and Ukraine. And that this is all convoluted, but that ends up going to the whole trying to discredit the Manafort prosecution,
right?
Because their argument is that the Ukrainian government at the time was trying to get Hillary elected. And so the Ukrainian government fabricated all of these financial documents showing that Manafort was committing some kind of fraud. In fact, he was innocent and that it's all just a big DNC conspiracy.
Got it.
And so Telezhenko has been pushing that for a long time. He met with Rudy in May. But apart from that, we don't really know. It wasn't really clear what was going on
yet. Now, who is, and just for backup, okay, so you have the overthrow of the government back in 2014.
Yeah.
You have Poroshenko, who's the president basically from then up until this year,
right?
And then you have this guy
Zelensky.
God, All right, and he is a comedian, sort of like a John Stewart type, who runs as kind of not really sure what he runs as, reformist candidate wins. So when Rudy comes over in May, there's sort of a new regime, new bosses in town, and he's kind of coming there to say, hey, we have some business we need you to look at.
For sure. And the other dynamic I would add there is that this whole conspiracy theory about DNC Ukraine collusion, the Trump administration completely drank the Kool-Aid on that. I mean, they completely bought into that, which almost destroyed, it briefly destroyed like the U.S.'s relationship with like the previous Poroshenko administration.
Right.
Because they believed that the Poroshenko administration had conspired to like try and prevent Trump from winning.
Right, right.
So,
okay.
So like, it's worth keeping that in mind as well.
So who is the person who Giuliani met with in Spain? What's that?
So, time goes on. So I think before we get there, we should talk about this July 25th phone call.
Okay.
Because what happens is that Trump and Zelensky have this phone call on July 25th. And there's this, the U.S. side doesn't release anything, but the Ukrainian side does. And what the Ukrainian side releases is a readout in which they say that, I don't have the transcript in front of me, but what they basically say is that Trump expressed the conviction that if Ukraine wants to improve its image, then it should complete certain corruption investigations, which have been like stymieing U.S.-Ukraine relations.
Okay.
So, it's a diplomatic wording, but still it's kind of understood, at least in a lot of what's happened since.
This is the Rudy stuff, sort of.
Yeah.
Right.
So it gets worse. So that's July 25th. One day later, the U.S. sends its special envoy for the Ukraine crisis, Kurt Volker, to Kiev. And he reportedly helped arrange a meeting between Giuliani and a top Zelensky foreign policy advisor, this guy Andriy Yermak. And so a week later, August 3rd, Zelensky and Yermak meet in Spain. Giuliani, is there a logic to why they're meeting in Spain? I don't know why.
I mean, they have their own country.
Right.
Right?
I mean, there was already a controversy about Giuliani going to Ukraine.
Okay.
I don't know why.
Maybe so it's not just they're like both happen to be vacationing in Spain and they meet up. It sounds like
it
they're
could
kind
be
of...
It, because there were other, advisors to Zelensky who like got involved in separate scandals because they were like partying at like mansions and clubs and stuff in Spain at the same time.
Okay.
But...
So who knows?
Yeah, who knows?
Right.
So they meet, Giuliani like... At one point, like tweets about the Biden allegations from Spain, and it's like tweets like geotagged August 3rd. So it's like operationally, it's pretty typical for him. they have this meeting, and it's not clear what happens. But what we know is that the Zelensky administration was really hesitant to play ball on this because they basically didn't want U.S.-Ukraine relations to be kind of
partisanized in this way.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, they didn't want to become like a prism of like U.S. partisan politics.
Right.
And so they were hesitant to play ball. And over that same time period, a couple other things happen. The biggest thing is that the U.S. starts to withhold $250 million in security assistance to Ukraine that had been appropriated by Congress to help Ukraine in its ongoing war against Russian-backed proxies in the country's east.
And is this basically military aid, like armaments or what?
I don't think it's not weaponry, but it's like...
They call it non-lethal.
We've been giving them a lot of Humvees and like uniforms and stuff like that.
But basically stuff that even if it's not guns you kill people with, stuff that is part of their effort to resist these Russian and Russian-backed incursions in the eastern part of the country.
Right. And it's something that they need, both just, materially and symbolically.
Right.
So that gets withheld. Yeah.
Can I ask one question? Because I remember, I don't know where this fits in the timeline. Mike Pence was over there recently, and I remember when Pence was there. I mean, I everything you're describing, I wasn't on top of, but I remember when Pence was there, he gave a speech, and he's like, if you guys don't stop being so corrupt, I don't know if we can be friends.
And, you know, this is one of the really vague areas about it, is that for, you know, for a year, basically for decades, the U.S. is one, a big U.S. concern in Ukraine has been corruption,
mm-hmm.
because we give them all this financial aid to keep them alive from descending, from basically from collapsing. And like the critique is we might as well just be transferring it directly to the Swiss bank accounts of the public officials there,
right.
because they're so corrupt, they just steal everything we give them.
Right.
And that's unfortunately not much of an exaggeration.
Right.
So,
so it's not like, in general, concerns about corruption are like made up.
Right. And, but I mean, the issue with the Trump thing is that they're conflating, I mean, they're using that as a fig leaf to cover up the actual, you know, corruption they're interested in, which is
Joe Biden.
Exactly. Right. Joe Biden, right. And, like, you know, Manafort getting prosecuted. Yeah.
Right. Okay.
So yes, okay. So in August, two other things happened. So they withhold this aid, and most interestingly, on August 12th, which we know from letters released this past week, a whistleblower comes forward from the intelligence community to the Inspector General of the intelligence community, Michael Atkinson, with a complaint that, you know, we know has to do with Trump's phone call with Zelensky on July 25th from the reporting that's come out, and also has to do with multiple acts that followed afterwards.
Okay, let me ask you this.
Yeah.
When you say followed afterwards, what I had seen is just multiple acts. Do we know that it is that whatever this whistleblower is concerned about starts in that phone call and then there's stuff afterwards, or does it also go backwards?
So that's not entirely clear if it extends in both directions.
Okay.
Just know, you know, that it deals with this phone call, and we know, you know, the circumstances, and also that it deals with the promise that Trump made, which brings us back, I think, to that readout of the phone call where Trump said that he expressed the conviction that if Ukraine, you know, completes these anti-corruption investigations, then its image will be improved.
Did the White House even acknowledge this call?
At the time, no. And I mean, for this White House, that's not entirely out of the ordinary. And one thing you can look at is the Washington Post, when they did their first story on the whistleblower complaint being about Trump, they included only the like interactions with foreign leaders that the White House had confirmed or announced. And that was like five other people, which included Vladimir Putin. And that,
right.
Like, I mean, rightly sparked,
but,
like, yeah.
But so basically, as of a couple days ago, the White House had not actually acknowledged that this call had happened, even though the government of Ukraine had
right.
done a readout. So it's not like it was a secret.
Yeah.
Just the U.S. government had never publicly acknowledged it.
Right.
Okay.
So I have a question. So the whistleblower went to the IG with these concerns.
Mm-hmm.
How does it get back in the acting DNI's hands? How does he have any ownership of this now to block it from Congress at all?
That's a great question. And it's, I mean, like basically the heart, it's one of the, it's at the heart of the controversy, at least on that side of it, with the disclosure to Congress, which is that the way the law works is that Inspector General receives the complaint. They have 2 weeks to process it. And in processing it over that 2-week period, they have to determine whether or not it meets this legal standard of urgent concern.
Okay.
And the Inspector General in this case found that it did, which triggers a 7-day period in which they have to transmit the complaint to Congress. Nominally, it has to go through the DNI. And different administrations deal with this in different ways. So, for example, I spoke yesterday with the whistleblower ombudsman under Clapper. He got fired actually under Coates, but he was telling me that under Clapper, basically it would like nominally go through his office, but he would never look at anything because he just didn't. It was too politically sensitive for him to like touch it. So he would just say, okay, just transmit this to Congress, to both the majority and the minority, and I'm just never going to look at it.
And just let them deal with
it. Yeah,
them.
Exactly.
And presumably, if I'm right, generally speaking, obviously you don't want a partisan to be the DNI.
Right.
But the DNI is a political appointee, someone who works closely with the president. And in general, the inspector general is someone who should be kind of like a career government lawyer, a less political person. So there's a logic to what you're describing.
Right. And so with the Trump administration, that's not the procedure they appear to have followed.
Surprisingly.
To put it a little bit dryly. And instead, the acting DNI in this case, a guy named Joseph McGuire, appears to have intercepted it. And what he did was he came in and he did a couple of things. One thing was that he consulted with the Justice Department Office of Legal Counsel, which suggests that there might be, you know, which, I mean, we now know, but early on that gave a suggestion that it probably had to do with the White House.
Right.
And he kind of intercepted it and said, actually, the IG was wrong in saying that it was a matter of urgent concern. It's not a matter of urgent concern because, and this is where it gets funny, it doesn't have to do with anybody in the intelligence community. It doesn't have to do with activities that are within the oversight of the DNI, which...
because it's the president.
Right,
and he's
exactly.
not an employee of the, you know, not a member of the intelligence community.
Yeah. And so that sets up the fight with Congress, which is why we know about this right now. So in doing this cover up, it kind of gets revealed.
But. Now, let me ask you this. This is something I've thought about. Let's assume that what we're talking about here is Trump's on the call and said, dude, you want that military aid? I need to see some action on Joe Biden. Let's say that is the thing. Now, somehow, you know, someone in the intelligence community finds out about this, says, hey, that's not okay, files their complaint.
Yeah.
Is there an argument that, setting aside that Trump is not a sort of a covered person in the intelligence community, is that really an intelligence thing at all? The complainer finds out about it presumably because of his access in the intelligence community, but we're sort of so far afield here, but at some level I could see someone saying this isn't an intelligence thing. This is the president shaking down a foreign leader, and just because someone in the intelligence community found out about it because they are read into the phone calls, has that excuse come up, for lack of a better word?
Sort of. There's a lot of, I mean, not excuses, but one interpretation I've seen floating around is that this really lays bare the extent to which we've given the president just like unlimited powers in terms of foreign policy. And that, you know, that's always been done with the assumption that the president is going to be acting in good faith and on behalf of the interests of the United States.
Right.
And that Trump obviously is like raising really serious questions about that arrangement.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
also
yeah.
legal questions about how far we can go to address that. On the specific issue of like, you know, intelligence, there are all other questions about, I mean, how they even heard about it, because we know that it has to do with the call, but we also don't know, maybe it was discussions with people who were in the room. We don't know what was intercepted. If there was an intercept, all these other questions kind of come up, and those haven't been answered. And those are really fascinating, because we also know that Trump, he has official phone calls, but he also supposedly is using his private cell phone.
Yeah, that was something that I was wondering about, because it gets into, you know, we know that they have clamped down dramatically on who gets access to like the transcripts of these calls.
Right.
But if it is over a U.S. government communication, you know, the White House phone, so to speak, someone's listening. You know, I don't know if Zelensky speaks English. Does he speak English?
He does, yeah.
Okay. So they wouldn't need a translator. But yeah, I don't see why we're not thinking that sometimes he just cracks out the cell phone.
Right.
And calls him up. I'm sure these guys will give him his cell number.
And I thought, right? He was already also reporting that Kushner is just like texting with like Mohammed bin Salman, right?
Right,
WhatsApp with him or something like that. Yeah.
Right, so, right. Yeah, right. Yeah. Who, I mean, there's lots of possibilities.
Yeah, I remember when the Trump cell phone thing first came up, and there were all those reports about how it's so easily hackable and traceable, and people are certainly listening in, and you know, he didn't drop that habit at all.
Well, that was that whole Stingray thing. Is it Stingrays? What are they called? Those foreign intelligence.
The Israelis had like something outside the White House.
Yeah, they put up. It's basically kind of like not a dummy cell tower, but kind of like another cell tower, and it's set up in such a way that it just grabs what's, you know, because when we're talking on the cell phone, no matter how much encryption, there's a cell tower somewhere around here that all of that stuff is going through. So a sophisticated intelligence agency can just stick up their own, right? Just grab the stuff out of the air. And so it's clear that is happening at some level. So where today, what is happening today? I mean, this has escalated a lot, just like in the last 18 hours.
Yeah. So it has the next clear kind of like point where something might be forced is on Thursday. There's going to be public testimony from the Inspector General of the intelligence community. So that's
public, not like yesterday where it was behind closed
doors. It's going to be public Thursday morning. Yeah.
And what do you know about him? You know, what's his deal?
Well, there's an interesting thing with him where he, during his confirmation hearings, I guess like pissed a lot of people off, for lack of a better word, by publicly stating that there was a huge problem with whistleblowing in the intelligence community and how the procedure should be better. But he stated it in a way that was like, I guess, aggravated a lot of people.
Like better in the sense of like it shouldn't happen as much?
No, as in like... the procedures that are in place are inadequate to handle this issue.
Oh, okay. So not kind of seeming to be someone who wants to kind of cover up whistleblowing, someone who wants to
facilitate it. Yeah.
Well, so
and the Inspector General's conduct here is really interesting, and it's part of what kind of tipped me off to why this might be Ukraine. Because so after the DNI blows the 7-day deadline, you know, Congress doesn't know that there's this complaint, and that's. At that point, it's all completely unknown. They're in uncharted territory. You know, that would have been what? That would have been the 26th of August. So it would have been like early September. So there was a few days before where this was just in the ether in government. but behind closed doors.
Well, I think there was in one of Schiff's letters, he says basically September 2nd was the day you had to inform us, and
right.
you didn't.
But he doesn't until September 9th. So that's right. a week later. But the thing is that September 9th is also the day that the House Intelligence, Foreign Affairs, and I think Oversight Committees announce their investigation into Giuliani's attempt with Ukraine. And so it's and later that day, the Inspector General sends this letter.
Like shows up.
And so that's what made me think, it might be connected.
So, yeah. Okay. So, and as far as we know, they didn't start that investigation because they're like, oh, we know what this whistleblower thing is about. These seem to be running on two separate channels,
right.
as far as we know.
As far as we know, yeah.
Right.
As far
right.
as we know. Because, you know, there have been a lot of public, because Giuliani is so obvious about everything, as we know. It's like, and that's something, honestly, part of why the Ukrainians don't want to play ball is because it's like, it's not like there's a question about what the investigation would be into
right,
Biden's
right,
son.
Right,
it's
right.
very, I mean, Giuliani is saying this is a political investigation. Like,
well, also, so I would assume, like, obviously, a lot of us hope that President Trump loses the election next year, but the Ukrainians certainly know. I mean, even if you assume total cynicism on their part, they know there's a good chance that
right.
President Trump isn't going to be president in a little more than a year. So it would be very bad for them to basically, you know, make themselves into an arm of the Trump campaign. And then, you know, Joe Biden's president yeah. in a year and a half. That's yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And in their view, that's, I mean, like the sin of their predecessor. I'm not saying that actually happened, mm-hmm. but I mean, that's like the kind of randomly the impression that was formed in Trump world that
right.
the previous Ukrainian administration like tried to tip the scales for Hillary.
Well, tell me if this is my impression is that during the 2016 campaign, by the middle of the year, late into the fall, everybody knows this Russia stuff is happening at
right.
some level. We don't know the details, but clearly Trump is very pro-Russia and Putin is very pro-Trump. And there's a lot of stuff happening. And what is it that there are people like around the Ukrainian government who are kind of like, dude, Paul Manafort, man, you got to look
yeah.
into this. So there's like, it's not totally made up.
It's not. And there's, so if you remember the thing that brought Paul Manafort down as campaign chairman was like, it was around $12 million. It was basically this like bribe ledger
yep.
surfaced in Ukraine. And it showed that like around $12 million in bribes were like, kind of basically earmarked for Manafort. Like his name was like next to them. So he either earmarked for him or he like signed off on them to go to somebody else. It wasn't clear from the structure of the letter. But there's a lot of questions about how that surfaced. It's very weird.
But it wouldn't be implausible at that point.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously that despite previously being part of the same country, that Russia and Ukraine are kind of mortal enemies
right.
at the moment. They see this guy who is you know, some kind of tight relationship with Russia. It would not be surprising if people in Ukraine are like, oh, you know, happens. I know about these bribes, Paul Manafort. If anybody
yeah.
wants to look into that,
right?
Now, well, but were you in Kyiv at the time?
Yeah.
Okay. So when that stuff was coming out, what was the general impression? Was the impression that kind of like, okay, Ukraine government kind of sees that Trump is the Russia one? That these leaks are kind of being pushed out there to discredit
yes.
his campaign?
Not necessarily to discredit the campaign, because I think the context needs to be understood is at the same time the Ukrainian government was still investigating a lot of conduct by the officials of the previous government. And so that ledger, the bribe ledger that brought Manafort down, was released kind of in the context of that investigation. So at first it wasn't clear if this was like targeted against Manafort or if this is just something that kind of happened in the course of them, you know, probing all this corruption by the Yanukovych government.
Right.
And so there was enough, I think, plausible deniability on their side that they could say, well, look, you know, we're investigating all this corruption and Manafort got caught up in it. What do you want us to do?
Right.
But at the same time, it was also, if I recall correctly, it was, you know, the government agencies that were investigating it made copies of that ledger available to certain reporters.
I guess the point I'm trying to get at here is that this idea that the Ukraine government, the sort of the post-Yanukovych Ukraine government in mid-2016 gets sort of pulled into this swirl a bit
yeah.
is not total fantasy.
It's not. It's it, not at all. No, I think that's correct. And I can add anecdotally that after Trump got elected, I remember talking to Ukrainian officials who thought the country was going to like be dissolved.
that so they like, were on the wrong side in a big way.
That was like it for that for like independence. Yeah. Interesting. So like it, but fear was real.
But presumably that's also not so much or not only because of something they had done, but because at that point it's getting really clear that Donald Trump is not just pro-Russia. He seems to be like in the pocket of the Russian government, and Ukrainian independence is like the sort of the original sin of the post-Cold War era for Russia.
Right. Yeah, that's definitely a part of it. And I mean, it's that, and it's also just, I mean, the thing is, remember his public statements. I remember there was an interview like a week before he was inaugurated with some German, I think it was like Der Spiegel or something, and he basically said like, well, the U.S. should withdraw from NATO.
Right.
I mean, it was, even that's like enough to.
Well, wasn't he? Didn't he also make a few statements, kind of like, I hear Ukraine's just like, you know, it's like Florida in the U.S. It's just part of Russia, and they just got a misunderstanding or something.
Right. And so that was all in the ether, and like people were, I mean, understandably, I think, terrified. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. So I guess as we're wrapping up, you know, you talked about the testimony that we're going to hear.
Yeah.
Can you just chart out some of the general next steps of what you think will happen going forward?
Well, I mean, there's a big question about where these leaks are coming from. You know, it's former intelligence officials, but like I was talking to some people yesterday who were saying like it's not clear if these are sort of like wink and a nod, like basically leaks are authorized by whoever, or if they're really like coming out like in a way that like they shouldn't be because people are pissed off. And I think we'll probably get answers to that over the next few days, just judging, you know, based off of what continues to come out. For me, the question is less like what hearings are going to take place and more like, is Giuliani and Trump, are they going to keep doing this? Like, are they going to keep pushing on, you know, investigate on like trying to like get the Ukrainians to investigate Biden and like just generally get compromising information on their political opponents by using U.S. foreign policy as like a tool to achieve that? I mean, I think the answer so far seems yes.
Yeah, I mean, he was when Giuliani was on TV yesterday, he was saying, yeah, it's awesome. Of course we should do it.
Right. Yeah.
I mean, it's and Trump was basically saying that this morning. Let me ask you a final question. In the Post report, Washington Post report, which I guess was Wednesday evening, the sourcing, and I think this continues to be the sourcing, they say to former U.S. government officials.
Yeah.
Now, that really caught my eye because this is pretty recent stuff.
Yeah.
And at least in theory, former government officials shouldn't know anything about this. So and this possibility seems just way too cinematic for me, is that there is this brief overlap between Dan Coats and Sue Gordon, the people who were running the ODNI. They're still in office for a few days after the whistleblower thing happens. And certainly after a lot of the incidents happen, they're now formers. Now, again, that sounds too cinematic for me, but And then the other possibility, and this is not an uncommon thing, it's even sort of what James Comey did, is someone on the inside says, hey, Kate, former official, I kind of heard this, and you do what you want with it. But something is weird there.
So there's one question. So again, this former whistleblower official I spoke with yesterday pointed out to me that there's a provision in the statute that governs whistleblowing in the intelligence community, which states that like upon receipt of a whistleblower complaint, the DNI can shut down an IG investigation if he determines that it's sensitive, if he determines that it's national security sensitive. And there's a question here, because if they really wanted to do a cover-up, why didn't they do that initially?
Mm-hmm.
And there's a big question to be asked there.
So I lied. That wasn't the final question.
Okay, that's fine,
A new final question. In that original report, it basically said that people close to Maguire, that his friends are saying, hey, he's not the guy here. He's in a tight position.
Right.
You know, he's sort of between a rock and a hard place. And they have sort of, it sort of made it sound like people, you know, close to him, whatever that means, are saying, hey, this is Department of Justice and the White House kind of telling him what to do. He's not doing this. And maybe that would be the explanation. Because it sounds like from what you're saying is the law is the inspector general can come to him and he can say, hey, you may think, but this is against national security to kind of pursue this. So it's done.
Yeah.
So he could have, he had a clean way.
It was a clean way out. It would have been the first time, I think, that would have been invoked.
Right.
But also, we just don't know because it's all national security sensitive.
Right.
But
right.
Still,
right.
Yeah.
Right. Right. Well, it's interesting too because I think I looked up Maguire is like career Navy intelligence, retired. So again, this isn't like, he's not like a Corey Lewandowski type.
Right.
I mean, this is someone who's...
He's a professional. I mean,
And again, I don't know, he's at least career Navy. I mean, he must sort of be intelligence to be in that, to be in that job. But yeah, he's not some like, you know, Sebastian Gorka type. I mean, he's at least someone who's like a career intelligence person. So I guess we're going to, I feel like we're probably going to know more by the end of the day.
Yeah, I agree.
Cool.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thanks for, we were geniuses to hire you. We were already geniuses to hire you, but we're especially geniuses today. All right. I guess that's all we got.
Come to talkingpointsmemo.com and track all of Josh's reporting.
Absolutely.
And sign for Prime as well.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. Oh, and also,
by Grady.
Yeah. Grady's Cold Brew. We're everything's by the seat of our pants today. Ready to give it a swirl. Get 20% off your first order at Grady'sColdBrew.com with promo code TPM. Become a subscriber to TPM, join Prime, and that's it. We'll talk to you next week.
All right. Thanks, Josh.
Later.
Thanks. Bye.